We'll do it live. Fuck it.
Hello.
Alrighty, I got it all figured out and everything's working good.
Okay. Cool. Good.
Yep. I was having a little bit of feedback. That was just because I had the volume too loud, I think, in my earbuds. And it was going to the audio the speakers. Nobody gives a shit. We're on the show here at thehalfguarded.com. Matt's going to take it away because I'm watching a dog walk around the house and it's not even my house.
Did you bring your dogs there as well?
No, unfortunately. Well, one of the Puggles in particular, he's a bit aggressive. He would have been a problem. So.
Okay. What kind of dog are you watching?
A terrier thingy.
Okay.
Bull. It looks like a little, I don't know, it's small. He's a nice dog, so we get along fine. And this house is fucking beautiful. I mean, it's not like it's huge. It's just kind of, it's in the middle of nowhere, kind of isolated. So, like, I could be killed at any time, or I could kill someone, and nobody would know. It's really rustic, kind of. I'm enjoying it. The only downside is I was like, I'm not bringing my fucking equipment with me. Like, fuck this. We'll just use the old internal microphone here on the Lenovo Flex 3. So let's get to it.
Sounds high tech. So since we last spoke, kind of, sort of, not that well, on Friday night after UFC 207, there's been a little bit of fallout. There's been a lot of mainstream press following the Ronda Rousey loss, and one article in particular caught my eye, and I think I forwarded it to you. It might not even been an article. It was a sound clip from some guy from Fox Sports named Clay Travis. Essentially, the headline read, "Ronda Rousey is a fraudulent creation of liberal sports media."
And oh, I missed the liberal part. Oh, even better.
Yes. Yeah, and then further on he goes, "There were a ton of people on the sports media who wanted Ronda Rousey to be good because it represented their belief that women are better than men." There's been other people, like, you know, your Skip Baylesses, even like Michael Rapaport, like that actor from like the 90s is talking about her and saying the fight was stopped because of, like, I forget what he said, like, white girl favoritism. Like, he thought the fight should have gone on and would have continued if she wasn't a white girl. And this is from a white guy. Just a lot of weird hot takes on Rousey and the loss. But that one from Clay Travis, who I had never even heard of before this, was probably the weirdest one, calling her a fraudulent creation.
Yeah,
I mean, like, for 3 or 4 years, she was the best women's fighter in the world. It wasn't a padded record. Yeah, she never fought Cyborg, but most people have never fought Cyborg. Nobody calls Holly Holm or Misha Tate or any of these other women a fraudulent creation. And Rousey walked through everybody until, you know, a year ago. So how it's fraudulent and how it's the liberal sports media that created her is kind of beyond me. And it's one of those things where when you know a little bit about a subject and you see people who, you know, have a lot of followers and get a lot of press, you know, your Skip Baylesses and Stephen A. Smiths, that whole crew of, you know, talking head sports commentators, makes you wonder about, like, all newscasts and other things, because it's like, when you actually know a subject, like, I kind of do know MMA a little bit, I like to think, and then you see that and you're like, what other stuff are these guys spewing that they really have no clue and no concept on?
Yeah, you hit a lot of topics there. I don't care. first of all, I've heard some variation of the "she's a fraud" thing. A liberal creation part was new. Let's keep in mind, Dana White did appear at the Republican National Convention as one of the few people to support Trump before anyone. So that's a very odd liberal dude there. I understand that her legacy is actually really tarnished now, because, I mean, she lost fucking worse than I could have ever imagined. But, but I was kind of, like, looking, like, she's ranked, like, whatever, number 3 or 4, some shit like that, in the USA Today rankings, I think I saw. And I'm looking at all the other people in the top 10. I'm like, oh, she beat all of them. Like,
right.
Oh, there's Betch Gohea, or there's Sarah McMahon. I'm like, she smoked a lot of these chicks already. So, like,
but even the chicks she smoked, not to cut you off, they were good. I mean, except for, you could argue Gohea wasn't really a top contender. Like, I think she was 8 at the time. But the only reason she was fighting Gohea was because she walked through everybody else in the division, and they needed a fight for her, and then they did it in Brazil. Gohea's from Brazil. It's like, she destroyed Sarah McMahon, an Olympic-level wrestler, Alexis Davis, like, probably the best women's black belt in jiu-jitsu in the UFC. It's like, she was legit. Granted, she's got her ass handed to her last two fights, but there's no fraud here.
No, it's I mean,
MMA's a weird sport.
Like, the UFC never lied. They never misled anybody or anything of the sort. I know what this author's trying to do. He's trying to equate it. Like, a few years ago, Rush Limbaugh made some comments regarding Donovan McNabb about how he thought McNabb got better press than was deserved because the media wanted a successful black quarterback, which he was, like, he got in trouble. He left ESPN because of it. But I always felt like there was, like, this, and there still is, an ongoing, desired narrative to create, like, the, you know, we can show the black, like, the one thing in sports that's left is, like, the white quarterback, the Tom Brady-looking guy. And we, you know, if somebody wants to show, rightfully, wrongfully, whatever, that there's a, you know, black guys can do it too, so maybe they push it a little hard. But there's never been anybody out there who's been like, yeah, it'll be a fucking great social equalizer when we can prove that women can be really great fighters. Like, this is not, like, a big deal. There is no historically women fighting, period. Like, it's not like she's, like, you know, the latest in a long line of women. She's the first big female fighter of all time. The previous biggest names in the history of women fighting or whatever have been, like, the Fabulous Moolah. And that's not even that's a joke, but it shouldn't be. But that's really what we're dealing with here. Yeah, she's lost twice now. That it tarnishes things a lot. But it tarnishes it in the way that if Royce Gracie had fought one or two more UFCs, he would have got the shit beat out of him by Mark Coleman or somebody like that. Right. If you want to criticize Ronda, it's just that she's the Royce Gracie of her day, and that maybe now there's supposedly better fighters. But even then, it's like, yeah, Nunez lit her up, and that was really, really bad. And it shows a lot of problems with Ronda. But Nunez also lost to Kat Zingano, and Ronda beat Kat Zingano. So Ronda's at least worst-case scenario in the MMA math world with the current champion. So like, even then, you can look at Nunez. What do you want to say about her? Well, she beat Miesha Tate, and we've clearly seen that Miesha Tate really wanted to quit probably even before she even fought that fight. And then she beat Ronda, who really can't strike. So, like, you can tear down any of them because the female division is just never – it's never going to be, and it certainly isn't now as deep as a traditional male division. So you're always going to have flaws in almost anyone. But for the longest time – I mean, Ronda has her issues, and I think that this loss showed a lot of them on so many levels, from tweets from LeBron James and all that, which I think are huge problems. But fuck that. For a while there, I mean, she was beating everybody's ass. She earned her fame.
Right. I mean, it's not a real good comparison, but the person I was thinking about, and it's not the best comparison, I admit that readily, is like Chuck Liddell. Okay, he was light heavyweight champion. He's killing everybody. He's knocking people out left and right. And then he loses 4 of his last 5 fights by KO. But after he lost, like, a couple, it wasn't like people were calling him a fraud.
Yeah.
To me, it's ridiculous almost. Granted, she's got holes in her game, and she's not perfect by any stretch. Clearly, we can see that from the last couple fights. But she was, before those two fights, like, the most dominant fighter ever in the history of MMA. Number one contenders in 14, 18, 32 seconds. Like, come on.
It would be kind of like, everybody always said Anna Kournikova was overrated as a tennis player because she was just really pretty and Nike pushed her. And she probably got more endorsements, yes, than she normally would have. But she was still a very good tennis player. And so she had been the big hot shit. Say she had won a Grand Slam or two, and then all of a sudden the Williams sisters show up and just smack the shit out of her and embarrass her and go, yeah, we're the real deal. Well, that doesn't diminish what she did. She was just, again, right time, right place, but everything she accomplished was legitimate. And yes, Ronda had, I don't even want to say she had advantages. She had some advantages, but She's not the prettiest girl of all time, and there have been other pretty females fighting in the sport, but she worked her fucking ass off for press and the taunt and to do every single thing anyone's ever heard of for press. So, Ronda, she earned her money and then some, and we know she did because the UFC keeps bringing her back, and they wouldn't be bringing her back if they weren't making money off her.
Yeah. I mean, I'll admit that there was some hyperbole with her when she was coming up and headed into that home fight in particular. Like, I remember vividly Joe Rogan talking, not just once in a generation, once in a lifetime, but once ever in human history, Ronda Rousey, and it's like, she can't box. So there was some hyperbole.
People got caught up, but even, like, look at what Rogan was saying. Like, I just kind of went through and said, we've never ever had female combat sports. Is a real thing. Like, in some respects, she was the first in human history. Right. Like, but, with men, like, we don't know who was the best badass in the 1700s or 1600s. But on some level, we know somebody was. Like, we have a pretty good idea. There was some town in, like, Sheffield or Bratwurst, whatever, be in Germany, Hamburg, where, like, there was some dude, everybody's dude, that dude's the motherfucking toughest son of a bitch in town, no question about it. Nobody ever, like, recorded in history George Hackenschmidt's wife and how tough she was or whatever. So, yes, I agree with you that they went over the top, that the once and forever type of athlete. I mean,
the big one for me with Rogan was when he was like, she could beat half of the men in the UFC's bantamweight division. Like, that was ludicrous. Like, That sort of stuff, like, played into it. That I don't know if he got caught up in it and truly believed it, because I for the most part I think Rogan's pretty honest and his opinions are well thought out and well argued, and for the most part I kind of respect his takes on things. Not that I always agree with them, but that was, like, ridiculous. It's like, she's not beating the worst man in that division under really any circumstance.
Rogan has, there's like two Joe Rogans. There's regular Joe Rogan, and then there's the
promoter.
The Rogan you only see in pre-done, pre-taped promotions like that, where it's 2 or 3 minutes long, and you can just tell, like, he is purposely hyping something. Now, he believes it on some level. He just allows himself to go a little bit over the top. Like, he's just kind of looking for a good soundbite. But Rogan does have a very odd way of just, like, it's like not even necessarily fake so much as just like him saying, I'm going to go 100% with my fucking total markout version of who I am as a person and just ride this shit because it's fun.
It's just interesting how the Monday morning quarterback is and how the bigger media who doesn't really follow MMA except for the Conor fights and the Ronda fights come in and act like they're experts on this stuff. It just, like, it makes me question a lot more, like, the news and whatever it might be. It's like, do these people really know what they're talking about?
Probably
just in
not.
General.
I mean, they probably don't because, I mean, think about it. On one hand, when they were in college for 4 years, they were studying how to be a journalist, which is a really fucking dumb thing to do. You just go do it. It's like any form of writing, pretty much, just do it. Don't study it. Just fucking become a journalist, learn some ethics and a few things here and there. There's something to be learned. But really, very few people, like lawyers. You just train to become a lawyer, and then you figure out what specialty you're going to do later on. Not like doctors. Like, doctors come out of med school or whatever, and, like, I'm a surgeon. I deal with legs. I'm a brain surgeon. I only deal with the brain. Like, there's very specific specialties. So, not to excuse these shit-ass journalists, because I don't, but I can understand where they don't know what they're covering. Like, their job is not to know. Like, if they knew, they would maybe not always ask the right questions. Now, these are different. These are pundits who are trying to draw conclusions from things.
I think they're more just trying to draw ratings, personally. That's what it's about with those shows. Yeah.
They all try to find something in the moment. And whatever what you just – I mean, you could take Ronda Luton to Amanda Nunes, and you could spin it left, right, however you wanted to with very, very little effort. Oh, you got the brown-skinned foreigner coming in here beating up the pretty little white girl. Like, that's not cool. Like, that's bullshit, taking our job or something like that. Or you get the snooty little Hollywood liberal blonde chick who thinks she's smarter than everybody. Well, look, she got beat by, just a regular good old-fashioned immigrant who loves America for America. Yeah, man, or some shit. I don't know. But, all I can really hope is that when it comes to, like, sports, like out the sports is you get, you'll look like Skip Bayless, who is professionally goes out of his way not to know what he's talking about. But I believe that he's watched enough football over the years that he's not ignorant of it. He may, you know, have shit opinions. He may not really understand the nuances, but he, I think he knows more about football than I do. And so I can only hope that, like, these are just because they're such weird niche stories and they're within the sporting world, but they're not really within the sporting world. It'd almost be like if, like, randomly I'm like, well, by the way, we're going to be talking about the latest Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu World Championships for the females at 118 pounds tomorrow. So can you get on that? And you'd be like, fuck, that is kind of related to what we do, but shit, fine, whatever. And then you'd be like, yeah, her last name is Gracie. She should have been better than that with a name like that. And you'd be like, just fucking sweating your way through 3 minutes of the segment till you, you know, throw to commercial.
Yeah, it's weird because the thing with Bayless, I find, I don't even know why we're bothering wasting our time talking about him. If it's NBA, he picks the Spurs no matter what. And if it's NFL, he picks the Patriots no matter what. Like, that's his go-to thing. And usually he comes out looking okay because both of those teams are always really, really good.
Yeah,
it's like, Tom Brady's the best. They're going to win the Super Bowl. That's his pick every year. And it's like they've won 4 or whatever, the last 15, whatever it might be. So he comes out always looking good. They always win the division, make the playoffs, and the Spurs are similar. So, I mean, obviously he's doing something right because he's getting paid and drawing ratings. But speaking of drawing ratings, UFC 207 prelim ratings were very good. They did 1.5 million viewers on FS1.
Wow.
That number was down from 1.8 million at UFC 205. But that, if you remember the 205 card, that was a really loaded undercard. And it was also on the regular night on Saturday and not going against the Orange Bowl. If you take those factors out, maybe the UFC 207 prelims would have beat the 205 prelims. Either way, it was up 8% from UFC 193, which was the last pay-per-view headlined by Rousey, again on a Friday night. It was also the fifth highest.
Wait, that was Friday? The Holly Holm fight?
No.
You're saying this again.
This show was on Friday.
I thought you were saying that 173 was also on Friday. Right,
no, 193 was a Saturday.
Gotcha.
But anyway, it was the fifth highest rated prelim show ever on FS1 on a night where they don't usually run anyway. So maybe the Friday night show and, you know, Ronda's whole lack of promotion and doing interviews and stuff may not have been that big a deal because in a lot of cases, the prelims are a real good indicator of what the main show will do for buys.
Yeah, like with this one, like sometimes prelims can be fluky, but given that these weren't strong prelims and it's Ronda night, and, you know, she's just, if you see something abnormally high, but it's for like a shitty looking pay-per-view, you can just be like, all right, something's off. Nobody expects, you know, UFC 206 to be doing a million buys. These high prelim numbers are just weird. But with Ronda, you can be like, okay, there's something to that. Although oddly enough, on Half Guard, we got our final numbers in finally after the night. And yeah, it did okay, but we did, much bigger for her fight with Holly, which I think may have been because the whole losing thing was drawn over, you know, 10 minutes or so. But it wasn't huge necessarily. So, I mean, not that that means jack shit. I think a lot of that would have gone up if the fight had lasted more than 45 seconds because it's just fucking pathetic. I can't get over it.
Any final thoughts on Ronda or UFC 207 in general?
I will say that the one thing I saw, well, not one thing, one of the things I saw that really kind of said to me, this is why she's not going to fucking make it back, was like a story like Kobe Bryant and LeBron James offer their support to Ronda Rousey. Now, normally I wouldn't really give a shit. She's famous. They kind of know who she is, so they want to sound like they're kind of cool or whatever. But that's the world that she's living in right now where people like that talk to her. And her, like when Kobe in his prime or LeBron right now or whatever, like LeBron goes out there and shoots 1 for 9 in the game and the next day, you know, puts up 12 points and is just playing like shit. You could just be like, dude, you got to work through it. You know you can do this. You just got to get out the kinks or whatever. Ronda's problems are not typical high-level athlete problems. This isn't like you're in a hitting slump. You just got to, you know, dude, you just got to get your confidence. You got to study the tape and fix your swing a little bit or anything like that. It's like, no, Ronda physically can't do half of what her sport entails. It'd be like if like they suddenly discovered after like two or three championships that Kobe Bryant couldn't dribble with his left hand. You wouldn't be like, dude, you just got to get over it. You'd be like, no, he can't physically do it. All anybody has to do is guard him on one side of his body because they know his left hand is useless. That's what she's dealing with. So it's like she's hearing this and she thinks that that's the case. If she thinks that that's why she's not doing well, it's because, you know, she just got to work harder or some shit like that. That's why she's going to stay with Edmund. And holy fuck, is that guy terrible.
If do you think she fights again? And if she does she just stay with Edmund, or will she change it up and say, "Hey, you know what? I've got my ass kicked the last two fights. I gotta do something different if I'm gonna keep doing this."
I mean, I can't imagine if she does fight again.
Because you know her mom's pushing for it.
Oh,
you know
yeah.
Her mom wants her out of there.
If she fights again, I can't. If she does fight again, I can't see her not sticking with Edmund. I just think she's so fucking stubborn that she would just be like, nope, this is how it works. I'm going to prove you guys all wrong that I really am great and blah, blah, blah. And yak. And she's just not going to get it because she's stubborn and she's got the LeBron James attitude of it. I just got to work through it or whatever. I don't know if she's ever going to fight again. I mean, yeah, people are going to be like, oh, she's a competitor. And I believed that for a long time, but. And even if you're a competitor, you get your ass beat twice and part of you is like, fuck this, maybe I'm just not good anymore. And when you're Ronda, you got all this money and you probably just tell yourself, I don't know what she tells herself. Unless Nunez pops for something, it's not like she can be like, well, I lost to Cyborg and she's bigger. It's like, no, you just got your ass fucking beat twice. Like, badly beat in a way that, like, cast a doubt on everything you ever did in your life. Like, holy shit. But if she comes back, she's got even more pressure because she's not going to fight a champion. She's inevitably going to fight somebody much lower. So unless they want to do like Hurt versus Paige VanZant and some sort of catchweight fight or some shit like that, I can't imagine she comes back. I think she rides out whatever bullshit movie she's doing, and then she has Travis Brown's babies before divorcing him. Well, they won't actually get married. She'll just have his babies and then leave him in about 5 years.
Okay. Other shows we haven't even talked about was World Series of Fighting on New Year's Eve. I don't know if anyone watched that show, but it did happen. I know it happened because there's results out there, and I watched some of it myself. Did you catch any of it?
Nope. Not a bit. I think you
would have liked it actually because it was a disaster. That basically what they did was they aired the three title fights. Hang on, let's back up. There were four scheduled title fights. One of them was on the prelims, which actually aired on NBC Sportsnet, which was
That fucked with me a lot because before I left for Vegas, I was going to record the show, but it wasn't showing up in advance.
Sure.
Like it was like my cable had gone out, or I reset it, or some shit like that, so I couldn't go too many days ahead. And when I finally did figure out, I'm like, where the fuck is this show? Because I'm looking, you know, 6, 7, 8 o'clock on NBC Sports. I'm like, wait, they put this shit in the middle of the day on regular NBC?
Yeah.
Okay. That actually kind of justifies a little bit more why they went with all these title fights. But I'm like, what the fuck is NBC doing? This is really like... I can't believe they're putting this shit on free TV. Like, this is weird.
Yeah, it was, but I mean, what else is on New Year's Eve from 4 to 6?
I know, it just shows people, it shows that they're just such pathetic bargain basement replacement filler program.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're not like, it's not like when Elite XT was on CBS and like, they made it a big deal. You're fighting on Saturday night. They hyped it. It's just like, we're going to put you on in the middle of the fucking afternoon on New Year's Eve. Have fun.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, for them to a degree, it's probably more eyeballs than most of their shows. But in the prelim card, David Branch defeated Lewis Taylor by rear naked choke in the fifth round. Then on the main card, Marlon Moraes defeated Jose Naldo Silva in the first round at 2:30 because Silva hurt his knee and couldn't continue fighting. Like, he sprawled or something and his knee went out. So that fight was, like, a dud. Then you had John Fitch and Jake Shields. I'm guessing you can guess how that fight went.
Yeah, I bet that was boring as fuck.
Oh, my God.
Did Jake Shields just hump him for five rounds?
No, Fitch actually humped Shields for four of five rounds. Wow. Shields won one round and Fitch won. Then afterwards, Fitch said he was basically going to retire because there was something funny in one of his brain scans or an MRI he did. So basically, he defended the welterweight title or won it or whatever, and then basically retired.
He said, by the way, everybody, I'm out of here. I actually know of a pre-existing condition in my brain that's not good for me. None of the commissions caught it. I actually knew about it. I still said, fuck it. And then the only justification he could give would be, well, it's fucking Jake Shields. I wasn't really worried about getting hit in the head here, so.
Yeah, essentially. And then in the main event, Justin Gaethje defeated Luis Firmino in between the third and fourth rounds because the doctor came in and looked at Firmino's eye and decided they couldn't continue the fight. And that was in spite of Firmino winning the first three rounds. Like, Firmino lit Gaethje up. Like, Gaethje looked, I don't want to say he looked like Ronda in there, but he was getting peppered left and right with shots and wasn't moving his head and was just getting wrecked and throwing these wild punches. Like, it was probably the worst I've ever seen Gaethje fight in my life. So basically, they had this three-fight card that one of the title fights ended with a knee injury. The other was John Fitch versus Jake Shields to a decision in five rounds. And then the other was a doctor stoppage between rounds because a guy had it looked like a broken orbital, that sort of thing where the eye really puffs out. But usually they don't stop it in that case. They just let him keep going. And in this case, you know, the New York commission or whatever is more uptight or more strict, except in the case of John Fitch's brain damage. So this was a disaster, just like you would probably expect, and not a very good show, and a show that probably had no buzz afterwards.
Honestly, I wouldn't have actually expected it outright to be a disaster. Justin Gaethje's had some great fights in the past. Right. I actually really like him as a fighter. Very good UFC caliber. Now I kind of wonder what's going on. But
it's just so anticlimactic because it was in between rounds. It's like, he's going to lose this fight. And then it's like they come back from that. You know, they try and do that one-minute commercial between rounds, like they run two ads or whatever. And they come back, and, like, the ref is waving it off. And you're like, what the hell? Did we miss the finish, or what's going on here? And then it took them a minute to realize and explain what happened. I'm like, this was not a good look necessarily for your first show. But not your first show, but your biggest show in the history of the company where – like, all three title fights have dissatisfying finishes.
Well, look, as long as nobody who fought one of the big three fights dies in the next year, or at least, you know, if not one, at least not two, it's various points that are ahead of Bellator's biggest show.
True. Very true. So, yeah, that was World Series of Fighting on New Year's Eve. That was the review. We need to get some sort of theme music for this, but it's time for the USADA story of the week. Brock Lesnar was officially suspended 1 year by USADA today for failing two drug tests in relation to UFC 200 in July. Lesnar is eligible to return to the octagon on July 15th of, I guess, this year, 2017, 1 year after his provisional USADA suspension began. Lesnar, as we've talked about multiple times, tested positive for clomiphene and its metabolite, hydroxyclomiphene, in an out-of-competition drug test June 28th and in an in-competition test on fight night July 9th. 1 year was the maximum sanction for Lesnar that he could receive because of its, what the nature of the drug as far as USADA is concerned or WADA. Lesnar was also suspended 1 year and handed a $250,000 fine by the NAC last month. Basically the NAC and USADA agreed and both suspended him for a year, which I guess is at least consistent.
Are they the same dates? I feel like it was like the 7th before. Maybe that's for John Jones, but I feel like Brock's suspension would start the day of UFC 200, because they almost always, you know, backdo them to the date.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, what I read and saw was July 15th. One year after his provisional USADA suspension began.
So maybe UFC 200 was in July 15th this year. Jones is a little shorter in time just because he was provisionally suspended a couple days early.
Yeah,
There you go, everyone. The mystery's been solved.
But what one interesting tidbit with this is in the USADA release, they wrote, any athlete serving a suspension must remain in the USADA drug testing pool until the ban is completed. If a suspended athlete officially retires during the suspension, the ban will be frozen until the fighter comes out of retirement and re-enters into the pool. That is particularly important for Lesnar, who retired in 2011 and came back for the bout at UFC 200, because basically he retired before the whole USADA thing even existed, and they gave him that, like, shorter return window because you basically only got tested for a month beforehand, and you're really supposed to get 4 months of testing before you re-enter, but they have the ability to waive it in certain circumstances. So there's a whole bunch of, people pissed off about Lesnar being given special treatment, and Mark Hunt's still probably pissed off, but that's the story with Lesnar at this point.
Yeah, it's funny. I was just thinking, I remember when Brock got the quote-unquote pass because of the nature of the beast or whatever, but pardon the pun. Just recently, Angela Hill couldn't fight at UFC 207 because she wasn't in the program long enough. And it's like, is this really how blatant you guys are with this? Or it's just like, look, we're totally fucking looking the other way because it's a big star. Like, that's really, really blatant. That causes a question. Forget the UFC. UFC, I don't give a shit. I don't expect them to be credible. But if you're USADA, you look really shitty right now, and as you always do.
Yeah, I wonder how that works if it's a UFC call, because, I mean, UFC obviously had input on how their USADA program was put together, and they've got that clause in there, and it can be waived. I forget what the exact wording is in the USADA, like, guidelines or bylaws, whatever you want to call that stuff. But they can make exceptions. And, I mean, obviously after Connor, fake retired and said he couldn't fight Diaz at 200, they needed somebody for 200. And it was like they might have only signed the deal with Baraka, a month or 6 weeks before, and it wasn't finalized. And it was what it was. It could have been more devious, too. I'm not saying that for sure. But that was a weird situation. And in the case of Angela Hill, it's like, do we really need her on this show to save it? No.
Well, I know. That's what I'm just saying. It's very obvious. It doesn't look good when you're that blatantly saying, yeah, fuck it. We're just, if you're going to make a lot of money, we're going to break the rules. Because that's not how that works. That's not how drug testing works. Like, it's not like they look at the Yankees and be like, all right, look, I know this guy is actually really important to you guys winning, so you're totally going to fucking get like half the suspension that somebody else might get. Because we all know that backup shortstop don't mean shit. So he can do he'll get the full suspension. You guys, you need Yankees don't have anybody of note on the fucking team anymore. You need Brett Gardner out there and left. So he gets less.
Yeah, but I mean, Brock Lesnar calls you up and says, "Hey, I want to fight on UFC 200 in 6 weeks. Can we make a deal?" And he's like, "Yeah, sure."
I would do
what
it
do
too.
You do? Hold him off till November and say, "You know what? You got to do this drug testing for 4 months before, though we're in a buy." Do you know what I mean? Like, you don't really have a lot of options in that situation.
Like, well, one, actually, if they held him off till November, it could have been actually even bigger. But that would have been a fluke. No, I agree.
Dana's surprise would have also been ruined because somebody would have looked at the USADA names and listings and drug test dates and obviously spoiled his big surprise.
But my point is really that they should just do it for Angela Hill also. As long as you're not doing it in a way where you're very deliberately trying to avoid things. It's like they needed a last-minute opponent.
Right.
At UFC 207, Angela Hill was available, was willing to do it, and she would have been cleared by Nevada standards, just not by USADA standards. In that sense, I would say, yeah. I mean, for incoming fighters where, you, like, you're booking somebody in advance and it's not a last second deal. You're not like obviously deliberately trying to skate it because it'd be like I would almost have it be like you need to be in the program for at least 4 months or you need to be in the program for no more than 4 weeks or something like that to avoid trying to create like, you know, a sign and cut and kind of just avoiding the rules type of deal. I just changed everything for them again.
Yeah. My understanding of it is, though, she was there while USADA was in effect. And I believe, she must have been. She had to have been there while USADA was still up. Wouldn't she? How long has she been gone? Anyway, it's not like she retired. Like, Brock's got that retirement thing working in his favor. She never retired. She's still an active fighter in Invicta. So it's a different situation. I'm not saying it's right from like an ethics standpoint, but there is an argument in the UFC's favor because she hasn't retired. She's still an active fighter. She just left the company.
Fuck that. Then that's up to you, USADA. You didn't keep track of her. Plus, she's an active fighter in a company that's, you know, sponsored by the UFC on Fight Pass. So.
Right.
I don't care, really.
Yeah, speaking of PEDs, Krokop won the Ryzen Openweight Grand Prix Tour on New Year's Eve. On his way to winning the tourney, he beat, I think, King Mo on the 29th. Then he beat Baruto on New Year's Eve and Amir Ali Akbari, all by knockout in the first round. After the fight, after winning the tournament, he essentially said he's retired. He's not going to fight anymore. He's done with MMA. Do you think he's really retired after winning this tournament? Or is Ryzen going to offer him a shitload of money to fight New Year's next year and he'll come back?
He ain't retired. Unless he was broke before this, he's fighting because he wants to fucking do it. He went out there. I mean, he looked decent against King Mo. It doesn't say a lot because King Mo is a fucking middleweight, but he's still, you know, that's like the best, like he did beat Gonzaga in the UFC, but you know, for a guy like, you know, Krokop, there was a time there when you've been like King Mo versus Krokop, I said, oh, fuck it, King Mo's gonna beat him. Like, that's where Krokop had fallen, but he ain't gonna, I mean, he didn't get hurt. And guys are fucking stupid. Like fighters are stupid that way, where they think the fact that I got through this unscathed, that shows how good I am, I can still compete. It's like they're going to keep going until they get their ass beat. But when they get their ass beat, they're going to think, I can't go out like that. I got to go out on a win. And so unless they go out like on some sort of really difficult, hard-fought, Stephen Bonner, Forrest Griffin type of win, like, they're just stupid. Like, Krokop's going to look back at this in a couple months and be like, you know what? You know, it's fucking Japan. It's not real fighting. I could beat guys named Baruto and some dudes with, like, names, like, right out of a child's book with a genie. So, yeah, fuck that. I'll do it. Yeah, let's go for it.
Ali, are you familiar with Ali Akbari at all?
Fuck no.
Dude, I was reading up on him today because I'm a freak. He's Iranian, right? But he's like he's in Greco-Roman wrestling. That's his background. He won the gold medal in the World Championships in 2010.
I figured he's one of those types of dudes who's like got like a legitimate background, but he's not really a fighter. Because if he was, he'd be on somebody else's radar. Like, these are people no one's ever heard of. And they're like, hey, gold medalist, dude, you want 250 grand to go out there? Sure, why not? I'll do it.
Yeah, I mean, essentially he was 4-0 headed into the – or 5-0 maybe, headed into the Krokop fight. But it was all against guys he never heard of. Like, he beat Heath Herring in the tournament by decision, and Herring was never that great, and he hadn't fought in 8 years. But essentially he failed to – he missed the 2012 Summer Olympics due to a doping suspension. And then in 2013 he won a gold medal – again, making him a two-time world champion, but then the International Wrestling Federation banned him for life after a second doping offense. So he was stripped of his gold medal, essentially, from 2013. So he's like a world-class Greco-Roman wrestler, but it's like he's popped for roids twice and is never allowed to wrestle again because of it. So it's like he's like the perfect guy for Ryzen.
Well, that's because he's Muslim, and they're known for their cheating. It says there right there in the Quran, thou shalt not, you can't drink, you can't smoke. You're supposed to sit down when you drink water. I'm not lying about that one. Your women must be covered from head to toe. You can use drugs if it helps you beat an infidel. And here's the, I say that, there's a lot of shit in the fucking Quran that's kind of like, you can't do these things except for in time of war against the infidels. Then yeah, then you can rape them and kill them or whatever. It's like, wait, what? This doesn't sound very fair. But yeah, also a friend of mine is Muslim. She posted the other day, like, some fucking video. Somebody put, like, you've been drinking water your whole life. You're doing it all wrong. Water should be drunk sitting down, not standing up for absorption purposes, blah, 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 blah. She goes, the prophet was telling us to do this 1,400 years ago. And I'm like, what the fuck are you fucking talking about? Like, Muhammad fucking sat there and he's like, this is what I'm going to fucking do. Like, all right, we can't eat fucking pig. You can have four wives and that's it. You got to drink your water sitting. Like, what the fuck? If you start over there, you got to drink your water sitting. Like, no, fuck off.
Religions are weird.
Yes.
Speaking of religious people and Muslims, Khabib Nurmagomedov has offered Tony Ferguson $200,000 out of his own pocket to fight him.
Did he really?
Yes.
Did he really? Or did his manager forget to log out?
In this case, the offer came from Khabib's account. In many cases, Khabib's probably not the actual person sending out these tweets. Today, Ali Abdelaziz, our favorite MMA agent, essentially sent out a tweet to Tony Ferguson from his own account, sounding like Khabib would have, and saying he only had 6 days to sign their bout agreement and to fight him. And it came from Ali's account, and Ali immediately deleted it, but people took screenshots of it, and it's all over the internet. So Ali, again, looks like an idiot.
You know what? Think about that for a second. Think about how kind of like...
I lost you. I cannot hear anything you're saying. I don't know if you can hear me.
Me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Do you hear me fine and good?
Yes.
Okay.
Normal.
Then this should be doing its thing, and I don't know what the fuck just happened. Well, no, I actually really have no idea. But we're back after no time at all away from everybody. Don't worry. You missed nothing. It's fine. Fuck this fucking new computer.
What happened?
I have no idea. Like, all I can think is...
You were talking, and then it just went dead.
Yeah.
And then I saw the call was still active, but I couldn't hear anything you were saying. I don't know if you could hear me, but...
All I can think of is I jostled something, so I'm going to have to sit real still now with this hot thing on my lap, because I don't want to fuck it up anymore as we get through this show where, you know, there's nothing happening, because...
I assume you're talking about your laptop and not the dog. Is the hot thing on your lap? Hot thing on your lap could mean a lot.
It depends on what time of the night we're talking about here. All right? Because for right now, the laptop gets things warmed up.
All right. So before our little malfunction there, we were talking about Khabib and Tony Ferguson. And
oh, yeah. I was calling Ali a racist.
Why is he racist?
Because if it turns out that he's been the one doing all of Khabib's tweets all mm-hmm. this time, then that means he is on purpose. He's purposefully writing them in shitty, broken English,
mm-hmm.
but trying to fake what he thinks that Khabib's tweets would sound like if Khabib could actually tweet, which is really not very cool. That'd be like, you know, if you're trying to fake it in, like, Chinese and you just, like, wrote, I don't know. It's fucking weird. You should have just done them in your own voice so everybody knew that it really was Khabib. That's all.
Yeah, I think there's quite a few fighters who do that as well, like have somebody who does it for them. I know Cyborg is kind of notorious for that. Whoever her manager is does it for her. But that was a funny part of it. But either way, Khabib sent out a tweet offering Tony Ferguson $200,000 out of his own pocket to fight him. to get the whole – for somebody to eventually get a fight with Conor is the goal here. So Khabib and Tony Ferguson are 1A and 1B for the next lightweight title shot. And Khabib wants to fight Ferguson and wants to beat him and get the title shot. So Ferguson responded that he wasn't interested in Khabib's money and wanted the money to come from the UFC, who it should come from, and not out of Khabib's own pocket. Was this a smart move by Khabib? It got a little press. It got a little bit of publicity. You think this was smart, or was it just Ali being silly?
It was fucking bizarre. This is what it was. Like, I didn't even know. I had no idea that Khabib even had $200,000. Like, that's was he kidding? Like, it's not bad. Like, I actually thought Tony Ferguson handled it well. Like, I don't know what he was actually really doing. He would have got his fucking money either way. I don't know. But I'm sure the UFC wouldn't have been really exactly happy about that. I think it makes the UFC look kind of weird in a way. Like, Tony's just, you know, good for Tony Ferguson for taking his chance. I would be like, you know, fuck this. I'm at the most power I've had in this company. I know Dana says, oh, well, you know, a contract's a contract. But fuck that. Conor renegotiates his deal every time. Like, if a contract's a contract only if everybody wants to participate. And so he's thinking, you know, I got a little bit of leverage. Maybe I want to get, an extra 50 grand a fight or something like that and a guarantee of two more fights or something. I don't blame Ferguson on that. I don't know. This idea that Khabib was going to give him 200 grand to fight. Additionally, that's fucking bizarre. Dude, Khabib, you're probably going to get, the next title shot if you do or don't fight Tony Ferguson. Why the fuck could you, give a guy 200 grand? Not like, I'll give you 200 grand if you beat me. Just, it's 200 grand just to fight. If you can throw around that kind of money to make a Fox Sports 1 main event happen, then don't bitch and moan to me and tell me that you need more money and that you're poor and that this sport isn't treating you well. Fuck you. You've got enough money.
Yeah, I wonder where the money's coming from.
Yeah.
even if it exists. I mean, obviously, realistically, you probably knew Ferguson would turn him down and he wasn't planning on writing a $200,000 check from his personal checking account. It looks like for the last show he was on, which was UFC 205, his show money is 26 grand. So he got 26,000 a show, a $26,000 win bonus, and $5,000 for his Reebok sponsorship. So he walked out of UFC 205 with 57 grand before doling that out to, his trainers and travel and all that sort of stuff.
Maybe so his dad got it for him. His dad's always in control. Maybe his dad's like, yeah, I bet 50 bucks my kid can kick your kid's ass. And he's actually secretly betting with Ferguson's dad. I don't know if Ferguson has a dad, but, I mean, he did at one time.
At some point, I can guarantee you Tony Ferguson had a dad. I can say that in absolute terms. But anyway, it was kind of an interesting little play by Khabib there, because it's rare you see somebody demanding a fight in that fashion, so that caught my eye. Changing gears here, UFC recently signed former WWE B-Show announcer and ESPN anchor Todd Grisham on as a new announcer. Many people are speculating that Grisham is the Dream Team replacement for Mike Goldberg and would be joining Joe Rogan on pay-per-view broadcasts. I can't imagine Grisham's the guy. I'm guessing he might be somebody short-term to kind of fill in here or there, and they might bump Anik up to the main play-by-play role and have Grisham fill Anik's former role. But any thoughts on Grisham, and is he really one half of Dana's Dream Team?
I kind of laugh at the idea that he's in UFC. Like, he'll be the first dude to do both, I guess. Like, that's a feather in his cap. And ESPN, like, who the fuck would have thought that Todd Grisham, and actually even Jonathan Coachman is a regular on ESPN. These dudes have better careers leaving WWE. Yeah. If he's one half of a dream team, according to Dana, then that means one thing, and one thing only. Todd Grisham convinced Dana White that he was the voice for all the calls that Jim Ross made. And Dana thinks, oh, I've got that guy. He looks a little different, but he looks pretty good on TV. And he's the guy that knows how to call great moments. And that'd be your dream team. Otherwise, they ain't got no fucking dream team. There's nobody out there, anybody who's ever begging, going, yeah, if it's just him and Rogan. It looks like the dream team is Rogan and a giant bong. There's no fucking dream team out there. Just fuck off.
Well, like, I mean, you don't think that there's somebody out there that he has in mind?
Maybe, but like, I can't think of, like, I never really thought of Mike Goldberg, is there ever been anything wrong with him? And so, like, I don't know, like, I hear dream team, I think, like, people be like, can you imagine if Joe Rogan and Boss Rutten, like, no, nobody's saying that. Like, right. I don't know who the, you know, because the straight guy, that's not, you know, nobody dreams of a straight man. The play-by-play guy is almost by definition supposed to be just kind of, I know what I fucking said, and I meant
it's
it.
So good. Like,
meant it. All right.
I want to cut that up.
But I don't know. I mean, they're just making shit up. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. To me, it seems it's weird to get rid of Goldberg and not have somebody in mind to replace him. And I can't imagine it's Grisham, like this B announcer who was on, I don't even know what he was on, Superstars or whatever. I don't think he was never the main guy on SmackDown or Raw, as far as I know. So it's just an odd thing. But it's funny that he'll be the second ESPN anchor to switch over because John Anik was on ESPN and then went to UFC. So,
although I always thought that Anik was kind of like an MMA guy on ESPN. Like I never really saw him do a lot of other things. Grisham's been just a pure, true anchor.
Yeah. Okay. That was another story that was out there. And then in other Dream Team news, this is going to upset you, I think. Demi Lovato and Luke Rockhold have broken up.
I fucking saw that.
Lovato is now dating Bellator fighter Guilherme Bomba Vasconcelos, which seems like a downgrade. I mean, I don't know. You went from, you know, the former middleweight champion of the UFC to a 0-1 UFC fighter and a no-name fighter currently in Bellator, but what do I know? Maybe he's got a great personality.
That really is. That is pretty fucking badass. Like, as weird as this, that she apparently has a fighter fetish. I'll give her credit in the sense that, I can understand, like, almost on some weird level, like Hollywood bullshit level, like, I'm this star, and I'll date the UFC champion. Like, that sounds kind of cool. Like, there's a little bit of sex appeal to that. There's, oh, he's kind of good looking and maybe probably gay, but we'll just hide that part. He'll be happy. We'll be on the red carpet together. But when you, like, you dump that guy, and then you start dating a dude in Bellator, like, you just fucking like fighters. Like, you don't give a shit. Like, you weren't really concerned about, like, advancing your career, you just have something wrong with you because your dad didn't hug you enough or something, and so you like this type of man.
Yeah. Now, do you think Rockhold will be able to recover from this? Is this the final straw in his...
Before he comes out? I don't know, maybe.
That's not what I meant, but fair enough. With this being our first show of 2017, any thoughts on the year that was 2016 to kind of close out the show here? For me personally, there's two big storylines for me. Three, you could say the sale of the UFC is probably the biggest story, but the other main two for me is the rise of Conor and probably the downfall of Ronda. Obviously, Conor became the biggest draw in the history of the company, and Ronda, while still very popular, has got creamed in her last two fights, and the Nunez fight was a disaster for her, and she may never fight again. To me, those will be the two more memorable things from the year. I don't know if in a few years people will really be like, oh, the UFC got sold in 2016 and how much of an impact that's going to have, but obviously it could be huge depending on the way the company goes. But as far as memories for this year, to me it's the year of Conor McGregor.
Yeah, I mean, from like a sports fan's perspective, I can't argue with you. I think for just like an actual importance, the sale is just... At first I was like, okay, it'll be sold, it'll be kind of the same, but now you're seeing, you know, lots of really important key people leaving the company, weird things happening, all these dumbass title fights being made suddenly. Like, I'm wondering, like, we've talked in the past, like, is this the UFC peaking? And I wonder if WMEI... you know, .fm is the one that's, you know, really going to kind of, when you go back, you go, shit, that really, like when that one dude came in charge of TNT and everybody's like, oh, that was really the downfall of WCW or something like that. But, yeah, as far as like your fan goes, Ronda losing won't be, I don't think that people will see this, will associate Ronda with a year, because part of it's the end of the year. Also, it's been like a story that goes on for a while. But Connor, I mean, what he did in 2015 was really impressive. But 2016, Connor really, you just look at it and go, he had this enclosed year. He started the year off this huge grudge match, awesome fights with Nate Diaz, and he finished it doing this mega show in New York, winning two titles at once and talking all this shit and becoming a true mainstream star in his own right. And he's not at like the Ronda level mainstream star where, I mean, he actually tried to be a little bit of a diva, but like Ronda went full diva with her shit. And, you know, Connor, he's still, at heart, he's a fighter. Like, he's a big mainstream fighter, and he'll stay as a fighter. He ain't going to, you know, he'll probably act a little bit here and there, but I don't think Connor has any delusions that he's going to be in the lead of the Fast and the Furious. I'll bet Ronda thinks, yeah, fuck that, I'll be the next generation of Furious. Like, be Fast and Female Furious, or the fuck, it'd be Triple F, and we'll look good on the poster. So, yeah, I would definitely go with this as, you know, the year of Connor, and then kind of like, I guess you could say it's like a turning point year. Very, like, lots of weird kind of once-in-a-lifetime type of things happen. Like, Bisping arises and becomes champion. And that's kind of like the end of his story. Same with Uriah Faber's story ended. But then you saw, like, you know, Misha Tate's story even end. Like, you know, lots of, like, the ends of career kind of. Like, it's weird to think of Bisping's story's ended, but that journey that we've taken with him has ended. While simultaneously we had, again, Connor reaching a different level. I thought by the end of the year, Max Holloway had stepped out and arrived. Cody Garbrandt also arrived at the same time. Even Amanda Nunes, to a lesser degree, again, somebody that from the beginning of the year was really on nobody's radar to now, you know, everybody knows her on some level. And then I guess to round it all out would be the debacle of the light heavyweight division with two champions. It just became one champion, and that one champion only fought once this year in title fights. After all, like, they fucking created, he got the championship, and he did it once. Like, John Jones has as many light heavyweight championship wins this year as Daniel Cormier does.
Yeah, it's a mess. But again, I don't think anybody will remember that.
No.
To me, again, just to put it into perspective, Connor fought three times this year. UFC 196 in March, UFC 202 in August, and UFC 205 in November. All three shows did 1.5 to 1.6 million buys. Like, that's crazy. Like, I don't think people look at it in that perspective. But, like, he had three of, like, the four highest numbers the company has ever done in one calendar year.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny because I saw, like, it's I think it's a Nike commercial. But, and they're showing, like, Cristiano Ronaldo and LeBron James and, like, all these stars from different sports, like, celebrating. And one of them, like, just showed flat out Conor McGregor celebrating. And he was just like he was anybody else. But for, like, I've kind of seen these types of things before. Like, George St. Pierre was featured a little bit. John Jones kind of a little bit. Mm-hmm. But this really was the first time I watched it, and it didn't feel forced. It didn't feel like the, hey, we're putting John Jones on our Nike commercial just to show that we're Nike and we're also hip to your new cool kid sport. Like, this was, he's just as big a star as any of them. He's not the best mixed martial artist. He's in that commercial because he looks, and he's got the charisma and the presence. He really is MMA's LeBron James in that regard. Just somebody that is able to truly, truly cross over. He's got something that, you know, maybe it would have been Ronda at one time, but it's definitely Connor now. And I think when it comes to fighting, you know, Ronda's always going to be an anomaly. But being able to, you know, create that male fighting figure, because I think people just always respond better to men being this violent, yeah, screaming type than they would women. But, you know, fuck it, maybe it'll be Ronda someday too, something like that. I'm just thinking all of a sudden the Brandi Chastain ripping off her shirt in the World Cup and how that became an image. So it's too bad that they have Reebok as a sponsor instead of Nike, because I think Nike did a better commercial.
Yeah, I mean, that's not surprising, is it? Do you think Conor will stay as active as he has in the past? You seem being like a once-a-year fighter sort of guy.
No, I think he's still – I bet he fights twice next year.
Yeah.
I just feel like he'll take a couple months off, but he'll be back in there. And the year after that, I think so long as there's money to be made, Conor is – maybe he's really thinking this and he's super smart and it's deliberate or he's just dumb luck, but he's fucking grabbing all of it. Like, he's got, like, a poor person's mentality still, which is the right mentality where, like, you know – he's just got this shit, and his goal is to be richer than anybody. So he's going to grab every dime he can. I'm like, you know, George St. Pierre would be like, I have enough money, and I don't need to worry. I'm comfortable. He didn't have the ego thing of, I'm going to be richer than everybody. He wanted to, you know, be physically better. And Conor, though, I think Conor almost doesn't give a shit about the physical now. Like, in his mind, he's done that. And now it's, fuck you, I'm going to be the first mixed martial artist worth $500 million or something like that. Like, he's going to focus on shit like that, so I think he's just going to fucking, you know, I think that's why he would step in there and fight Floyd Mayweather, just be like, yep, first guy in MMA history ever make that kind of money. He would just do these things. So I think he's going to be pretty much as active as he can be while addressing fatherhood, or maybe he'll become a dad and realize that all this fighting is just pointless. He's just creating a world where the child will grow up thinking that violence solves things, and that's not the world Conor wants to leave behind. And he becomes a vegan because he doesn't want to even hurt a fly, and that's the end of Conor McGregor, all because he got his girlfriend pregnant. And then he'll feel bad about the fact that he wasn't married at the time, that he quickly hurried up and backdated it and changed it so that his daughter, of course it's a daughter, would not grow up knowing that she was technically a bastard for some time. That's how much Conor would be in love with his new child, and would change everything, and he would be wearing cardigans and wearing reading glasses at night by a fire, and he would read books, real books, the kind that you could smell. They had, like, the jagged edges on the side that weren't smooth. They were deliberately, he probably got them at a store because they were kitschy looking, but he still reads them, and he does all this. And he says, no more fighting. I've got my money. And donates most of the money to charity. And then a year later, he goes, what the fuck did I fucking do? And he comes back to the UFC. So he's going to fight a lot.
Okay. Well, that was a roundabout way of getting to that. And looking forward into 2017, will John Jones fight more than once in the UFC in 2017?
Yes. I think he will. I think
wow.
I think that John Jones has shown that. I'm betting that he doesn't get suspended again, because look, if he gets suspended again, it's like his fucking career's over. So I might as well take his career will be over path. And in that case, Jones fights very active, like when he can. This last year, he fought in April. He was going to fight again in July. So if he fights next July or August, I could see him easily come back for November or December. Okay. I think John Jones is a three times a year guy, and I think he'll crank him in there.
All right, and then we'll keep going with this prediction theme for a couple more questions. Will Brock Lesnar fight in the UFC in 2017?
That is a...
I say no too.
I think Brock will look at it and be like, fuck this, I went in there, I beat up a real top 10 dude. They got me on some bullshit estrogen thing. Everyone knows I have asthma. And he gets to go out. And like, because if he comes back, all that will happen is they'll just bring all this shit up again. And so he'll really have nothing to gain. If he comes, right. All he could do next time is win. People be like, well, he's a cheater. And if he loses, it proved he's a cheater. Now he gets to go out and be like, fuck you, everybody cheated that time. He was overshadowed by John Jones. So people will just be able to remember him. You know, and again, fuck you. If you want to go down top, beating the shit out of Mark Hunt's a good way to go out.
Yeah, and to me, I don't want to say it was a money grab for him, but I wouldn't have been surprised if he only wanted to fight one more time anyway and get his, you know, or he probably made at least $5 million for that fight, easy. So I wouldn't expect him back.
And I also think it allows him to mentally just be like, I went out on, you know, as close to the top as I could get. There would be too many politics to get a title shot. And he's like, I proved I can still do it. And that allows him to go do 30-second match with Goldberg and make more money doing fucking almost nothing this year than anybody.
How about GSP? Will he fight anywhere in 2017? And I say anywhere with the caveat that he is now currently a free agent, according to him and his lawyer.
Of course, yes. The free agent, George St. Pierre. I say that George St. Pierre does not fight next year. I don't think he's done forever? I think George St. Pierre will be done forever as a result of not fighting next year. I think he'll have it in his head for a while that, yeah, I can do this. I'm on the right side. I can be free. But the thing is, like, unless he's training 100% all that time, even if he realizes it by April or May, he'd still need time after that then to train and get in shape and fight again. And I think at that point it'd be like, it'd just be too long. I think the process itself, it's too new for him to immediately have a change of heart. I don't think he's going to need communication with Dana. He's not Donald Cerrone, who's just going to call him and be like, yeah, Dana, what's the fuck's up? It's like, no, St. Pierre's got possibly a lawsuit going. You know, he's got a lawyer involved. Somebody's going to, for good reason on many levels, actively keep his client away from Dana. And I think that just, you know, all the lines of communication are cut off, and the justice, she is a slow bitch on a good day. So, yeah, George St. Pierre's career is over.
Positive outlook. Will Ronda Rousey fight in 2017? I like your dramatic pauses, by the way.
I'm really trying to, you know, those are good questions. I feel like I don't want to repeat myself, but I say no. Yeah. I think she's done also. I think Brock's done. I think George St. Pierre's done. I think Ronda Rousey's done. I think the Conor McGregor's sitting there smoking like fucking Cuban cigars wrapped in $100 bills going, I'm getting a fucking piece of this company because they got fucking nothing. Number two behind me is a cokehead who can't keep clean for more than 3 months at a time, and he's laughing all the way to the bank, and he's like, I'm going to fucking own me a country soon because Ireland's got some debt issues.
Yeah, he's sitting pretty. When you talk about all those guys, it's like, we know Anderson Silva's done. I mean, he'll probably fight again, but as a dry, he's pretty much done. Jones is a question mark. Brock probably won't fight again. GSP probably won't fight again. Ronda might not fight ever again. It's like, they've got nobody headed into 2017 except Connor, who said he wanted to take 10 months off. It's pretty, they're screwed, but the year's not looking promising at this point. Well, could somebody rise up in a year like Connor? Yeah, maybe there's somebody out there that we don't know about, because Connor's rise was fast, man. He won 3 or 4 fights in a row, got that Mendez fight, and drew 800,000 buys on pay-per-view. Could lightning strike again? Seems unlikely, but you never know. It's possible.
Yeah, I think there's also the issue of, it's never really fair to say, look and go, wow, is there going to be another Connor? Because there was never a Connor before him.
Right.
Like, they've had kind of like, you know, George St. Pierre's gone, but he's been gone for a long time. Like, Brock has never really been there as a draw. Like, he's just as likely to fight next year as he was this past year. They can't really rely on him. And, you know, so if all they have is Connor, they develop some new guys. Again, not everybody can be a shining star. Otherwise, it's just the middle of the day. So Connor's going to stand out. And the UFC's goal is to make sure you have enough guys at the John Jones level who are kind of a draw-ish. Like, you know, Chris Weidman in the right state seemed to do okay. Bisping is probably an okay stopgap. I don't trust Yoel Romero, but whatever. But then you just hope that, you know, you get a Dominic Cruz level guy who's not a disaster, and Jose will be there, and there'll probably be, you know, fuck, Donald Cerrone will go out there and win another 5 fights in middleweight this next year, and he'll conquer that division too. So I'm sure they'll be fine, and if they're not, I'm just going to blame WMEI 97.4.
Do you see any like star potential with Garbrandt? Do you think he could become a draw?
I actually do see a potential, and I think we talked about it last time in the show that no one will ever listen to because of fucking audio problems. Cody Garbrandt to me is a guy that really, he had a great year. I mean, he may have had the best year of anybody. I was thinking, like, you know, who's fighter of the year? There's mm-hmm. there's a lot of good choices, but you know, he took out 2 top 10 dudes with ease, and then Mizugaki, who actually may have also been top 10. You know, I think he's got a look that's unique. I think he would play very well as kind of like, he's just a perfect representation of a kind of like what the next generation Team Alpha Male is. He's kind of got like this good looking bad boy thing to him, and I could just see him doing black and white photos for Calvin Klein or something like that, and kind of being like this, you know, like this pretty boy that they all like. And he's got a hell of a style. He himself can talk. Faber knows how to talk. Faber's always going to be there. He looked spectacular. He's got one punch knockout power, and he won the title using his power. So I think that with the right kind of publicity, the right opponent, you know, especially if it's TJ Dillashaw and Dominick Cruz, would probably be his two fights next year. He'd have some good, if he wins them both, he'd have some good feuds that people would react to. Yeah, I think Cody Garbrandt might end the year as a, he may become the biggest growing star of 2017.
Yeah, I could see that too. That's why I mentioned him. Right now I'm going to list all the current champions in the UFC. You've got Demetrius Johnson, Cody Garbrandt, Jose Aldo, sort of Max Holloway, Conor McGregor, Tyron Woodley, Michael Bisping, Daniel Cormier, Stipe Miocic, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, and Amanda Nunes. Out of them, who is least likely to be champion at the end of 2017, and who is most likely to still be champion? And you can't say Holly Holm or Jermaine Duran to me. They do not count.
History tells me that Stipe Miocic is the least likely to be champion at the end of the year.
Okay.
I think that other people will lose. I would actually favor more people to lose, but if he's to be champion at the end of the year, unless there's some sort of injury that keeps him on the shelf for a long time, he'll be at three title defenses. That'll be a UFC record. Just heavyweights just don't keep those titles. And
You think Bisping's more likely, though?
No, I don't.
To me, I don't see Bisping winning another fight. Unless he fights like a catchweight or something.
I don't, actually. But again, like I said, I'm just going, by the odds historically. Bisping could beat Yoel Romero. He could, gas him out. We've seen Romero have cardio problems. Maybe he beats him in the fifth round, something like that. I don't know. There are ways for Bisping to win, because I've seen it happen with kind of underdog champions kind of put together for a fight or two. Again, no heavyweights ever kept a title that many times, and that would be Miocic will be setting, UFC and MMA history, I think, actually. I don't think Fyodor did it three times, which is, it's just astonishing that it's never happened, and it's kind of a dumb reason, but again, I just can't get past, this is just the reality of heavyweights in MMA. He's going to face Dos Santos again, or Mark Hunt. He's going to face somebody that can just bring you down with one punch, and so that's why I say he's the least likely to remain champion at the end of the year.
Okay, most likely?
Demetrius Johnson.
Yeah.
That seems fair. Jose Aldo easily could lose the title to Max Holloway. He could lose it to Frankie Edgar if they fought again. They could lose it to Jose Aldo. Conor McGregor. There's plenty of guys he could lose it to. Conor could easily lose his. Tyrone Woodley, without question, could lose his. Bisping will almost definitely lose his. Cormier, I don't even know who will be the champion. There'll be like three of them by this time next year.
Cormier might not even fight again. Who knows?
Exactly.
He's getting hurt or something.
Cody Garbrandt is very good, but he can lose. But Demetrius Johnson, he's already proven himself so much better than everybody else in his division. And they just have nobody. They're fucking grabbing guys off reality shows, and like they're actually doing better than some of the other guys. Like, oh, we're going to watch him face Joseph Benavidez for the 15th time, or Henry Cejudo, or Zach Markovsky, the Japanese one. There's just way too many. He's so far ahead of me. The only way he loses is if he goes up for a super fight, and I don't see him and Cody Garbrandt as a super fight. I could have seen him and Dominick Cruz, but Garbrandt just doesn't have the championship allure for a long time. He doesn't have the kind of personality that would work. I think Demetrius Johnson just goes out next year and wins three fights and continues to have nobody watch or care.
Yeah. You think he's more likely than Joanna?
Yeah. I think okay. that...
Like, I feel like Joanna's kind of in the same boat. Like, right now, the number one contender is Gadela. Number two is Kowalkiewicz. Number three is Esparza. Number four is Nama Yunus. It's like, even those top four or five contenders. I mean, fifth is Andraj, which I find, like, an interesting fight just because she seems to hit so freaking hard. But it's like, most of those people, she'd be the heavy favorite. Like, Michelle Watterson's seventh in the division right now. It's
really, with her, a lot of it just comes down to Jessica Andrade exists. And right. I just see Andrade, I'm like, I can see her winning the fight. Like, I can't see anybody at flyweight beating Demetrius Johnson. I just can't imagine.
That's true.
I can see Andrade beating Joanna. Joanna's last fight, you know, she didn't look, she looked human. She didn't look, you know, I don't want to say it was a bad performance, but she was in there with somebody that she should have been able to really let loose and look great with her striking. And instead, her striking kind of got exposed. I don't want to say exposed, but you could see she's super great against a certain level. But if you're technically very good, she's just very good as well. So she's not going to blow out everybody. She's not Mirko Krokop in his prime or anything like that. So, yeah, I could see somebody maybe outpointing her, or if you're Jessica Andrade, just becoming the 115-pounder Amanda Nunes. Next year's the year of the strong fucking Brazilian woman. I'm telling you that.
Will Fedor Emelianenko win a fight in 2017?
Yes.
Okay. Mitrione or somebody else?
Regardless of what happens with Mitrione, if he wins, he will fight sometime like in November in some joke shit show in Moscow or wherever, and he'll probably lose the fight by everybody's estimation, but the Russian Federation will magically give him the decision.
Okay. Will there be a legitimate MMA union in 2017?
No, not even close.
Will WSOF still be in business at the end of 2017?
I think they have a contract through 2017, so that's why I will say yes.
Okay, will halfguarded.com still be in existence at the end of 2017?
Yes, it would take more than a year probably to get this thing kicked off the internet for some sort of libel that we've no doubt committed.
All right, that's all I've got for this week and this year.
All right, that's it for everybody, and this shit will be up pretty soon because there's no special intro this week because nothing fucking happened since we talked last time.
Yeah, I could have put something together.
I don't give a shit. I just use one of the shit things I got right now, and it'll make the show be up for a quote. I should shut the fuck up, everybody. All right, bye, Matt. Bye, everybody. We'll talk to you guys again next week.
Talk to you later. Happy New Year. Bye.
Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, times come to send you on your way. We've seen it all, bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about.
We hope you enjoy your stay. It's good to have you with us, even if it's just for the day.